Right now, though, we want to know what all this means for the offshore wind industry here in the U.S. And the world's Carolyn Beeler from our Livable Planet desk has been digging into that. So, Carolyn, we just got a pretty good taste of what this offshore wind business looks like in Hull in England. Generally, though, across the pond in Europe, they're way ahead of the U.S. when it comes to offshore wind. Tell us where exactly the industry here stands right now.
Yeah, so there are 94 wind farms off the coast of Europe, and there is exactly one off the coast of the United States. That's off of Block Island in Rhode Island, and it's just a tiny little pilot project. But there are more than 25 additional projects being planned here in the U.S. That includes two projects in Maryland that have already won purchasing agreements from the state, and then proposed projects off of Long Island, New Jersey, and North Carolina. It's unlikely that all of those 25-plus projects are actually going to get built, but we do seem to be at something of a turning point for the offshore wind industry here in the U.S.
So Chris's story mentioned that what's happening in the U.K. could spur investment in offshore wind elsewhere in the world. Is that happening in the U.S.?
Yeah, what's happening in Europe has been a huge contributing factor to this momentum shift here in the U.S. I spoke with Stephanie McClellan, who's the head of an effort out of the University of Delaware to promote offshore wind. And for years, she's been working with state leaders to help them figure out how to make offshore wind work for their ratepayers, their utility customers. And for years, every time she's walked into a meeting, she says she gets the same question.
What is the cost of offshore wind? Is the price going to come down? And then the next question would be, how much is it going to come down? So up and down the East Coast, every state that I've worked with, either governor's offices or legislators, that's the question.
And when individual states here are trying to answer that question, they're looking to Europe for answers. So as offshore wind prices fell over there, it started to look more and more viable here as a part of the solution for coastal states who are looking to get more of their energy from renewable sources.
I think we certainly can say that unless there was a large enough market in Europe that pulled to the market these innovations and these cost reductions, we would not be even having this conversation today about offshore wind in the United States, I don't believe.
So Stephanie McClellan there mentioned innovations and cost reductions in Europe. So we're seeing cheaper prices, but make that connection, Carolyn, from European innovation to cheap prices here. How does that work exactly?
A lot of the R&D and supply chain improvements that have gone into building the components of different turbines in Europe would translate to savings for U.S. projects. So, for example, the biggest cost savings that's come in Europe has been an increase in turbine sizes, so they can generate about twice as much energy as they could even a few years ago. Another thing is that capital, so borrowing for these types of projects, is seen as less risky than it used to be, so the cost of borrowing money has gone down, which also translates to the U.S.
So, Carolyn, if the industry, the offshore wind industry, is still in its infancy here, can we really predict how much prices will come down and what effect that'll have on the overall industry?
The industry is in its infancy, but we do have two data points that help suggest that price really is dropping here in the U.S. So that one offshore wind project that's already in the water off of Block Island, Rhode Island, the price being paid for energy there is about twice as much as the price that was contracted out for two new projects off of the coast of Maryland.
Wow.
That'll go in the water several years down the road. So the price really is dropping. To put that in context, though, those Maryland prices are still, you know, more than twice as much as energy that would come from a natural gas plant that would be built around the same time, according to projections.
Gotcha. So we're pretty close to the offshore wind power tension here in Boston, because what might have been the first big offshore wind project in the U.S. was right off the coast of Cape Cod. And a few years ago, it got canceled after powerful local residents opposed it. So how much has public opinion changed since then?
It's hard to say if or how much public opinion has changed. Actually, over the years, there's been relatively high support of offshore wind for people in coastal states. But history does tell us that vocal minorities, especially those with a lot of power, can stop these types of projects. So it's yet to be seen if that's an issue going forward. One thing that has changed is that technology has improved so that these offshore wind farms can be sited farther off coast, which might equal less public opposition from folks who live on the coast and might be seeing these turbines on the horizon.
There are still concerns, though, about what offshore wind power and turbines actually mean for marine animals, right?
Yeah, there has been a lot of research done, but we still don't know exactly what the long-term implications for marine mammals and other species are. And that's something that Chris Bentley's last story in this series, airing later this week, will get at.
Well, we'll tune in for that. Carolyn Beeler from the World's Livable Planet Desk, thanks very much.
You're welcome, Marco.